This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, April 11th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Turning to the Trades. Some students opt to take a more traditional career path. Argenta. This article is by Valerie Wells. Trevor Webb was tempted by college. I love to play football, said Webb, a senior at Argenta Arena High School. It's one of my passions, but the thing about the trades is going to school isn't for everybody. Ultimately, Webb decided it wasn't for him. His grandfather is a longtime member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and after listening to him talk about his work, Webb chose to apply for an apprenticeship. You still have to go to school, he said, but you get training on the job, and not everybody is built to sit at a desk all day. Some people learn best by going through the motions of what they're learning. You get paid while you're on the job, and at night you go to school. I like it a lot. Nationally, there's an estimated 6.3 million vacant jobs across all sectors, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The agency projects faster than average job growth across vocational fields over the coming years. With tens of thousands more jobs projected by 2026 for electricians, carpenters, and various construction-related work. In 5 years, Webb said, he'll be a journeyman electrician and making many more money than his classmates, who will be fresh college graduates with little or no job experience in their fields. According to U.S. News & World Report, the average mechanic's wages are $38,000 a year, and a registered nurse makes almost $69,000 a year, both careers that can be attained with two-year training programs. The average cost for trade schools or community colleges is $33,000, while the average four-year bachelor's degree can cost upward of $100,000, including room and board and books. Even with scholarships, that can leave a new graduate with some staggering debt. Additionally, trade schools often have strong job placement programs or, like Webb's apprenticeship, you can earn money while you learn. The high demand for workers to replace retiring employees has led to the Decatur School District offering that option in internships and other programs, said Ashley Grayned, Extended Learning Coordinator. One middle school course allows students to try out various trades. The cool thing is the trades have given us access to their MC3 curriculum, which is usually $75 a kid, Grayned said. The trade guys are coming out, and they're going to help teach and make it interactive. That's specifically designed for that vocational track kid. For years, Grain said, schools have steered kids toward college and at least a bachelor's degree, but are hearing from local businesses that they have jobs they can't fill. They're saying, our pipeline is drying up, Grain said. We're going to come in and be able to do the work that doesn't require a degree. Who's going to come in? We have to serve that market of kids because not everybody's going to college, and that's okay. This is about how we help them become productive citizens with good wages, good benefits, so they can thrive and raise a family. Roofer Ted Clark said he always knew he didn't want to go to college and preferred to enter the family trade. In roofing, you're outdoors all the time, and I enjoy that. Going job to job and not being stuck in one spot, he said. The pay is excellent and the benefits are excellent. While the union has apprenticeship programs now, Clark said when he was starting out, he just learned on the job from experienced roofers. You can't be afraid of work, he said. It's hard work. Most of the trades are pretty hard work. People interested in that type of work must be willing to show up every day, he said. To apply for an apprenticeship, you have to be 18 have a GED or diploma, pass a drug test, and have a driver's license. Design heat and air technician Tyler Elsey went to college to become a pharmacist, and about 3 years into college, he said he realized that's not what he really wanted to do. I kind of stumbled on HVAC by accident, Elsey said. The more I read about it, the more I realized it's an all-encompassing. You learn about different things. A 2-year course of Richland Community College helped him get started, he said, but in his field, there are always ongoing training and new things to learn, which is one of the things about it that appealed to him. It's also steady work with technicians in demand. If I lost my job today, in 2 days, I'd be at work someplace else, Elsey said. There's an insane amount of job security. It can be a competitive business, but at the same time, there's just never enough people. Everybody is always looking for a good quality technician. Careers in the trades, by the numbers, 13%. Growth in skilled trades through 2024, or 180,100 new jobs, 18%. The decline in skilled workers in the 19 to 25 age group since 2006. Source, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. School board lays off teaching assistants. 24 jobs to be restructured, in New Approach to Discipline. Also by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review. Decatur. The Decatur Board of Education laid off 24 teaching assistants on Tuesday as part of a restructuring of how the district handles students with discipline problems, a move criticized by those who supervise the students and say they weren't asked for input. The change comes as the district moves to eliminate alternative placement programs and replace the teaching assistants who supervise them with student support facilitators, a job description approved by the board March 27th in a 6-to-1 vote. The alternative placement rooms, commonly called APR, are roughly equivalent to in-school suspension, where students are placed to prevent disruption in the classroom due to behavior issues. The new job description also calls for candidates with a bachelor's degree, which is not required of teaching assistants, though some do have a bachelor's. The board voted unanimously in favor of the motion with no discussion. APRs serve elementary students, while middle and high schools have their own program. The number of students in APR on any given day varies widely, and as Baum School principal Tanya Young told the board on Tuesday during a presentation, a small group of students is often responsible for repeat infractions. The layoffs affected teaching assistants with the least seniority to create positions for those who would be displaced by the elimination of the APR jobs. Paula Busboom, president of the Decatur Federation of Teaching Assistants, said the district's administration never met with the union about the change before making it. She said she had a number of unanswered questions on Tuesday before the vote. Nothing the board ever voted on said close APR rooms, she said. There's never been any cost figures given to what it costs to staff the APR as we're currently staffed and what it's going to cost to hire these people with bachelor's degrees that have no ties and no relationships with these students. Superintendent Paul Frugot said the district has a committee and subcommittees working on changing the format of the APRs, but the plan is incomplete. The committee is working on those recommendations as we speak, he said, following Tuesday's board meeting. They have three subcommittees working on each of those recommendations regarding alternative ed. For me to say exactly what that looks like in order to comply with Senate Bill 100 and our trauma-informed approaches, we're going to have to redo how we do APR rooms. Senate Bill 100, the state school discipline reform law that went into effect with the 2016-17 school year, requires student school districts to exhaust other options prior to suspension or expulsion. The outline of the new Decatur plan was presented at the March 27th meeting with three parts, Rigaud said: a kindergarten through 12th grade plan, a suspension school, and recovery transition rooms. The subcommittees are assigned to each of those components. Rigaud said he was sorry to hear that Busboom did not feel the teaching assistants were included in the process of making these decisions, because the committee included a representative from that union, as well as a representative from the teachers union and administrators. While the plan will be complete by the beginning of the 2018-19 school year, which begins on August 15th, he said he can't provide a timeline on when hiring will begin for the new job or how many people will be hired. The financial implications of the move also aren't known yet, he said. It's more about restructuring the room and the supports needed, he said. We would hope to be working on that within the next 90 days, but don't hold me to that, because I don't want to commit our committee to something they're not comfortable with, because it's a collaborative approach. There's 12 or 14 people on the committee, and we meet every few weeks, and we're working on those. We'll have recovery transition rooms in place at the start of the next school year. How those will look exactly, I'd be remiss if I said I know how things will look exactly tonight. The new job represents a material change in working conditions that will require the district and the union to meet at the bargaining table to negotiate. That meeting is set for April 12th. The displaced teaching assistants will meet on April 18th to choose new positions based on their seniority. Losing those APR positions, Busboom said, means that senior teaching assistants will also lose significant pay. Another concern, Busboom said, is that there are 90 unfilled positions in the district already. I just find it unfortunate that we're going to end up having to release some very good teaching assistants that want to work for Decatur Public Schools, Busboom said. We have a hard time filling teaching vacancies and teaching assistant vacancies with people that want to be heard and want to stay in Decatur and are interested in us, and how we're going to let 24 of them go that choose to work for a DPS. That does not speak well for the district, which is not for budgetary reasons. Over the past two decades, the district has tried a number of different ways to address the needs of students whose behavior requires alternative placement. The alternative placement rooms were created in 2000 after the district cut its alternative classroom education, or ACE, program at middle and high schools. The cut was part of $10.2 million in budget cuts the board made that year, including $1.46 million to cut alternative education. In elementary schools, the APR was instituted as a place where disruptive students were sent as sort of a time out, as it was described by Alita Graham, then president of the Decatur Education Association. Teaching assistants were assigned to oversee those rooms under the supervision of building principals, but were not allowed to teach the students because they are not certified teachers. The loss of the ACE program meant that more older students were out of school due to suspension, which board members said could result in a higher dropout rate, as already troubled students fell further behind and gave up on their educations. The district's budget recovered by 2004, and some of the cut programs and personnel were restored, including alternative education for middle schools. By 2016, alternative education programs were consolidated into the former Decatur Area Technical Academy building on El Dorado Street, where Futures Unlimited, Milligan Academy, and Phoenix Academy are located. Futures Unlimited is described on the Macon-Piatt Regional Office of Education's website as being for students at risk of dropping out or truancy to allow them to complete their high school education. Students must be at least 16 and referred by their home school. Milligan Academy is for students with behavioral problems that are interfering with success in a traditional school setting, and Phoenix is the Decatur School District Alternative School. Michelle Mitchell, an APR teaching assistant at Muffley School, said closing the APR room without a strong plan in place is not how to best serve children. The teaching assistants with seniority will be taking kids from those with less seniority, including her own daughter. APR assistants have built relationships with students, parents, and staff over many years, providing service to the district in these positions, she said. There is a wealth of knowledge that we could have utilized if we could make change to the alternative ed program. However, we are not included in any of the discussions to close APR rooms. Not listening to the voices of the people who do this work every day is not what would best serve our kids. We ask the board to work with us, not against us, in order to change APR rooms into what best serves our children. Synthetic pot seized in Taylorville. Police say two people were arrested after an officer seized 41 packets of what is suspected to be synthetic marijuana during a traffic stop Monday afternoon. Taylorville Police Chief Brian Heil said the officer initiated the stop about 3 p.m. He said in a phone interview that the stop took place in the city near Illinois 29 and Illinois 104. The driver, a 33-year-old woman, and her passenger, a 53-year-old man, faced preliminary charges of manufacture and delivery of a controlled substance, police said. Heil said the drug charges are pending the results of an Illinois State Police Crime Lab chemical analysis of the 41 packets. The release said the woman was arrested on an outstanding Christian County warrant. A representative of the Christian County Correctional Center said she was released on that charge Monday. The release said the man was released from police custody pending the investigation. The use of synthetic marijuana, commonly known as K2 or spice, has been linked to the apparent cause of 3 deaths and several hospitalizations in the Chicago area and central Illinois since March 4th. Emergency funding applications now due, by Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review. Decatur. Catholic Charities is accepting applications to distribute federal funding of local programs that feed and shelter people in emergency situations. The money is provided through the Department of Homeland Security, Federal Emergency Management Agency, under the Emergency Food and Shelter National Program. The funds are distributed by a local board made up of members that include Decatur's Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois, the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, and the Jewish Federations of North America, according to a news release. Agencies that meet the following requirements are urged to apply. Private voluntary nonprofits or units of government must be eligible to receive federal funds, have an accounting system, and practice non-discrimination. The deadline to apply is 5 p.m. Friday, May 4th. A letter of request should be sent to Robin Murray at Catholic Charities. The address is 239 West Prairie Avenue, Decatur, Illinois, 62523. It can also be sent over email to Murray. Any agency applying for the first time should call Catholic Charities at 217-428-3258, extension 235. The next article is about Illinois elections. It's entitled, Aging Voting System Sparks Concerns. Federal funds to bolster security may not be enough. By Sarah Zimmerman of the Associated Press. Springfield. Last summer, with an important Illinois election season months away, Shelby County officials in central Illinois feared that their outdated voting equipment wouldn't be approved for use by the State Board of Elections. Most of it dates to 2004, and it's becoming harder to find replacement parts. Often it's difficult to read their machinery's paper record, which is needed to verify votes. It passed inspection, but County Clerk Jessica Fox said the county, which is running a budget deficit, faces an upgrade of as much as $300,000. Sooner or later, we must have new equipment, regardless of the costs, Fox said. Shelby County isn't alone. Machine malfunction during the March 20 primary election was among the top reported issues to a hotline set up by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, a national nonpartisan voter protection group. Many old voting machines across Illinois jurisdictions caused delays, which resulted in voters losing confidence in the system and some leaving the polls without voting, said Amy Gandhi, Director of Voting Rights and Civic Empowerment for the committee's Chicago branch. She added that some polling places opened late, sometimes because of malfunctioning equipment. Election and cybersecurity experts agree that replacing aging voting systems, which typically last about a decade, is critical to defending against cyber attacks and maintaining public trust. Congress has approved $380 million to upgrade equipment nationwide as part of its effort to prevent a repeat of 2016, when the Department of Homeland Security determined that Russian hackers tried to breach election systems in 21 states. Illinois is the only state to publicly acknowledge hackers penetrated its voter registration system and accessed 76,000 active voter registration records. No records were altered or deleted, but the attacks made some voters jittery. In Wabash County, County Clerk Brenda Britton said one voter called before the 2016 election to say that he would not cast a ballot for fear that voter information could be compromised. The Prairie State would get more than $13 million from the congressional plan, provided it puts up a 5% match. The State Board of Elections said it is adding $600,000 to its budget request for the spending year that begins July 1st. But that's a fraction of the $147 million it got more than a decade ago from the federal Help America Vote Act, which allowed states to overhaul their voting systems. Compounding the fiscal problem is the approximately $4 million a year in federal grants for voter registration system security that wasn't available from the State Board of Elections for 2 years because of an historic state budget stalemate. Illinois's lack of election infrastructure investment has put the state in a tough spot, particularly given the federal government's warning that another Russian attempt at interfering with the November election is likely. Even if the state had enough funds, there wouldn't be enough time to completely overhaul its voting infrastructure before November. The last effort to completely upgrade voter equipment under the Help America Vote Act took years. A key question in Illinois, then, is the best way to spend limited funds during a narrow window. State elections officials are moving cautiously. I want to do whatever we can in the next 7 months. Christina Cray, Director of Legislation for the State Board of Elections, told the House Election Security Committee last week, but I want to use that money wisely. Few municipalities can afford a revamp on their own. Macon County spent $550,000 to replace its infrastructure before the 2016 election using fees from wind farms. Chicago, where Board of Election Commissioner spokesman Jim Allen says that the system is brittle but not broken, is considering an upgrade. But in the nation's third largest city, that's a project carrying a price tag of tens of millions of dollars. The Federal Election Assistance Commission, which is overseeing the latest funding distribution, has suggested that states replace paperless voting machines. Paperless machines can't be audited, meaning it's difficult to detect a breach. Illinois voting machines leave a paper trail, putting it ahead of other states, according to Lawrence Norden, Deputy Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. But Norden said Illinois uses devices called direct recording electronic voting machines, which are prone to incorrectly record votes. That becomes an issue because voters often don't check paper receipts to ensure their votes were recorded correctly. The State Board of Elections said that more than 13,000 direct recording electronic machines are still in use. Replacing them could cost as much as $4 million. Norden adds that cybersecurity protections go beyond replacing machines. States should also protect their voter registration systems and implement better post-election audits to further strengthen public trust, he said. The most damaging thing that can be done is undermining people's faith in democracy and potentially undermining their desire to participate and believe in our democratic institutions, he said. Man shoved in bar suffers fractured skull, Decatur. A sworn police affidavit said a man was shoved so violently in a Decatur bar that he suffered a fractured skull. The incident happened at 10:36 p.m. Thursday at the Captain's Palace Bar, 411 East Williams Street. The affidavit said a 52-year-old man did violently shove a 49-year-old man to the floor, where he struck his head. He was later diagnosed by Decatur Memorial medical staff as having a skull fracture and brain bleed on the right side of his head caused by the incident, the affidavit said. The 52-year-old was arrested Monday and booked on a preliminary charge of aggravated battery. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. And that's the end of Part 1 of the Wednesday, April 11th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with Part 2 after the break.